Eric Puchner is the author of Dream State, the newly named Oprah's Book Club pick. The novel tells the story of a bride-to-be, her fiancé, and his best friend over the course of a single summer, and the unexpected impact of those events on the characters and their families over a 50-year span. Puchner chairs the writing seminars at Johns Hopkins University. His previous books include the story collection Music Through the Floor, a finalist for the New York Public Library's Young Lions Fiction Award, as well as the novel Model Home. The latest is Dream State, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Eric Puchner to the roundtable this morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, congratulations on the novel. This is an amazing achievement, a beautiful novel, just a big, deep, wonderful book that you can just tear into and get your teeth into and enjoy. You have some events coming up over the next this afternoon and tomorrow, and I'll talk about those in a moment. Let me ask you of what it was that ultimately brought you to this particular subject and wanting to tell this tale at this time.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, my wife and I have been going to her family's lake house in northwestern Montana for the past 25 years. And it's a place that's just really near and dear to my heart. It's probably my favorite place on earth, honestly. So I knew I wanted to write about that particular setting. And the house in the book, even though it's a fictionalized version of northwestern Montana, it's a town that I've called Salish, Montana. The house itself is based very much on the house that is in my wife's family. And in fact, it was built sort of the turn of the 20th century by a Lithuanian immigrant who was my wife's great-grandfather. He came over and was so destitute. He was living in, I believe, Glasgow, Montana at the time. He was so destitute, he had to live in a packing crate. And he survived the winters because a train would go through town and throw coal to him so he could warm himself. But he started a dry goods store in the back of a saloon and managed to become a sort of self-made middle-class man. And then he built this house that we have been visiting for many, many years. You know, apparently when he had it built, he hired a contractor who was a drunk, and it took longer than it should have. And whenever someone comes to look at the house, to work on the house, they take one step inside and say, "There's not a single right angle in this entire house. Who built this thing?" So it's just a house that is quirky and wonderful and that I love. And so I knew I wanted to write about this particular place.
At the beginning of the novel, we meet Cece, who's flown to Montana a month before her wedding to go through everything. And how much, what is it that she knows? Because this is her fiance's family lakeside cabin.
Yeah, she loves this place, and she's also sort of in love with her fiance's family. She's still grieving the death of her mother when she was a teenager and has never really gotten over it. And she was an only child. And here's this family with these three brothers, these three sons, and they're just sort of vibrant and crazy and alive. And she loves to go visit. So she's decided that she's going to come out. She's going to marry Charlie, her fiance. He is a cardiac anesthesiologist. So he is sort of stuck in LA while she comes out early to Montana to plan this Montana wedding because she loves the place so much. And when she's out there, Charlie has hooked her up with his old friend from college, who's a college dropout, very different from Charlie. His name is Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
And he's become a little bit of a misanthrope. He is also reeling from a death, the death of a good friend in college. And has been psychotically depressed for a little while and is in recovery from that and is working as a baggage handler at the airport. So he goes out and meets Cece and asks if he can help out, and things get kind of complicated.
Certainly do get complicated. But this book takes place over many years. And then when I was saying that it's just big and it's a lot of meat on it and there's a lot there, that this isn't just the story of a wedding and issues around it. This is really something that you look at where you can examine the choices that people make in their lives.
Yeah, well, thank you. Good. I mean, the wedding is really just a starting point for the book. I knew that it was coming. I knew two things about the book. I knew that it was going to be set in this house, and I knew that there was going to be this kind of disastrous wedding that happened about 150 pages into the book, which would serve as a fulcrum on which the whole book would pivot. And everything would be different after this wedding. It's a disastrous wedding because it's a wedding in which half the wedding party has norovirus, which I don't know if you've ever experienced it, but
Yes.
it's a
Awful.
really horrible. It's been going around
No,
this winter.
awful.
It's
Yes.
horrible. So I actually officiated a wedding in which half the wedding party had norovirus, and the one of the flower girls threw up on her way down the aisle, and the groom was so ill and green-faced, he had to sit down in the middle of his wedding vows. So those are the two things I knew about the book, and I knew also that I wanted to cover a wide swath of time, and that the book was going to be partly about sort of mistakes we make when we're young, both the individual mistakes that we make, but also the collective mistakes that we make and then pass on to our children. And so I knew also that I wanted to write about what's happening to the landscape in northwestern Montana and really the American West as a whole, because of climate change as well. So that's a big part of the book.
When you were writing this, you knew it was going to be, you knew it was going to be big. I think I read somewhere you had a 500-page manuscript. So, and then at that point, is it what you want it to be, or it's a hell of a process to get it to the next step?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I think it was more like an 800-page manuscript at one point. That's in manuscript pages. I don't know what that translates into book pages, but yeah, it was big. And what happens in the sort of latter part of the book is that I start to skip through time in a way that's almost like a stone skipping across water or something. So there's a lot that happens in the white space between chapters. And I wanted to achieve a particular emotional effect by doing that. But finding the right balance about what to show and what to elide was really tricky. And it certainly didn't come out whole cloth on the first try. So there was a lot of removing of chapters. I don't even know how many chapters ended up on the cutting room floor, so to speak. And then also some filling in of chapters of places where I would have someone read it and they say, "I really want to know more about Charlie's relationship to Jasper, for example, his son." And so I would write a new chapter. So yeah, I mean, trial and error. I'm all about revision. I do lots of rewrites, both with my short stories and my novels.
Eric Puchner will be at the University at Albany this afternoon at 4:30 in the Standish Room in the Science Library, and you can find out more by going to nyswritersinstitute.org. Eric will also be at Odyssey Bookstore in South Hadley, Massachusetts, tomorrow at 7 p.m., and you'll be talking to our good friend Ed Schwarzschild, who I assume you know.
Yes, we're old friends. We both had fellowships at Stanford. Actually, we didn't overlap in terms of our fellowships, but I know him through that connection.
A great person to have a conversation with about the new novel. You can find out more about that event by going to odysseybks.com. Odysseybks.com. There are moments in the book when the narrative we hear from a non-human character. What is it that brings you to that of what does that allow you in the writing of such a book?
That's a good question. I'm really interested in books that have kind of nimble narrators who can inhabit various points of view. I like a good omniscient narrator. That's fallen a little bit out of fashion, although we have plenty of contemporary writers who do it really well, like Zadie Smith. But I was interested in this book in occasionally reminding both the readers and the characters that we're not alone on Earth. You know, we're only one of the Earthlings that inhabit. And in fact, most of the Earth is inhabited by creatures who are not human. And so I think I wanted that perspective to shift occasionally, to see things from animals' points of view in order to A, both put some perspective on the the characters' lives and how, in the grand scheme of things, there's a lot that's more important than their sort of individual problems. But also, I wanted to evoke the fact that we're doing something irreparable to the earth, and we're not the only people who are going to suffer from that.
They can be more trustworthy, right?
Hard Meaning, to say, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it just seems to me that when as I was reading these parts, I thought, like, oh, okay. So, I mean, maybe it's just my background, but you feel very trusting of the animals.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a moment where I move into a cat's perspective. I hesitate to say I'm actually moving into the animals' minds. You know, there's that, you know, famous work of philosophy by Nagel, who talks about, it's called, like, what does it mean to be a bat? We will never know what it means to be a bat. You can't see the world through a bat's eyes. But so I'm sort of half in their perspective and half out, but I am sort of seeing the world for a moment from the vantage point of an animal. And in that particular scene, the cat tells us something that we haven't learned already, which is that one of the characters, Garrett, is actually, the cat is afraid of Garrett because he smells like fear. And I loved the idea that an animal would be able to reveal something about a character that the humans wouldn't know.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by being truthful, that you, yes, of not only that they wouldn't know, but also isn't afraid to say it and to make that known. When you were starting in this, the title of the book is Dream State. Were you going for that in some way?
Yeah, I mean, it went through a lot of titles, so I can't say that was my original intention. It had some really terrible titles. I'm pretty bad at titling. I sometimes wish that they would just farm out titling to somebody else and let us do the writing of the book and not have to worry about it. But I mean, I do like the title Dream State. It took me a while to arrive there. And then once I had the title and I was putting the book through subsequent drafts, a lot of the themes began to cohere around this idea of dreams. So both the sort of, like, you know, good side, the good interpretation of dreams, and the bad interpretation of dreams. So, for example, partly the book is about how, as we get older and as we begin to spend more and more time not in the world, but in a virtual world, on our devices, on our phones, things seem to tend to seem more and more like a dream. And so that's partly what I was after. There's also, of course, the pun on Dream State, the state of Montana, which is, you know, if you've ever been there, is pretty dreamy. But also this idea that we can accomplish our dreams, particularly if we think about those sort of ghost lives that we decided not to live. And I think it's seductive to fall into the dream of, oh, if only I had done this and I had lived this way, instead of the way that I'm living now, I would be happier. And the book interrogates the illusion, the dream of that as well.
When Oprah picked your book for the book club, she called it an exquisite examination of the most important relationships we have in our lives, love and marriage, of course, and friendship, and how life can turn out very differently than we expected. Eric Puchner will be at the University at Albany for a New York State Writers Institute event at 4:30 this afternoon, Thursday, at the Standish Room in the Science Library, nyswritersinstitute.org. Eric will then, tomorrow, be at Odyssey Bookshop, odysseybks.com, for an event with writer Edward Schwarzschild. That's at 7 p.m. Eric, a great pleasure to speak with you. Congratulations on the beautiful novel, and thank you so much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. A pleasure.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the new book is Dream State by Eric Puchner. It is published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.